LegalizeFreedom.com. Why are we here? Where do we come from? Where are we going? From the nature of reality to the future of humanity. Listen without limits. Unchain your brain. Change your thinking. Change your life. LegalizeFreedom.com.
Greetings and welcome once again to LegalizeFreedom.com. I'm your host Greg Moffat and my guest today is Graham Phillips. Taking Graham's latest book, The Mystery of Doggerland, Atlantis in the North Sea, as a starting point, this is a wide-ranging chat covering a lot of ground. Topics discussed include myths and legends of global floods and lost civilizations, Atlantis as a time rather than a place, underwater ruins and what might lie deeper below the surface, megalithic culture and memories of Atlantis, the illusion of progress and what civilization really means, and what the deep past can teach us about our future. Hello and welcome, Graham, and thank you so much for joining us today on LegalizeFreedom.com.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very much for having me on.
Graham, today we're discussing your recent book, The Mystery of Doggerland, Atlantis in the North Sea. Now, although you've been on the show before, it's been quite a while. So before we dive into our chat, for listeners who don't know, just give them a little potted bio information about your background and your work.
Well, I am an author and I have been writing for over 40 years, I think. My books are about historical mysteries. I started off writing a book about an investigation into whether King Arthur was an historical figure. I then went on to write about the search for the Holy Grail. Was the Holy Grail a real item? What happened to it? Where is it? I did other historical figures like Robin Hood. Did he exist? Then I went on to searching for artifacts. I wrote a book called The Green Stone, which was searching for a stone that was set in a ring that once belonged to Mary, Queen of Scots. I searched for the Ark of the Covenant and I wrote a book about that. I also searched for and found what may have been the staff of Moses. I've written a book about who murdered Alexander the Great. You get the general idea.
Absolutely, absolutely. And as I say, listeners can find links to our previous interviews on the show notes for this one if they want to go back and explore subjects we've talked about in the past. Now, obviously, as the title suggests, and as my introduction suggested, Atlantis in general, that mythical continent, you know, myth not necessarily meaning didn't exist, but it has gone down in myth, is the general topic. And many writers and researchers have speculated over the years that if there was, no matter what this place was called, if what is now known or thought of or spoken of as Atlantis existed, where was it? Because there's been locations suggested all sorts of places around the world. So perhaps the first thing to do here would be to just give the thing in context, really, is that in human history, when we go back to beyond the Ice Age, what is often referred to, you know, as the antediluvian period, you know, before the flood, and we should just say that these flood myths are universal around human cultures all over the world and remembered in later legends. But once we get past the Ice Age into the time before that, things get very hazy. And this is can make it in many ways difficult to research because we have so little sort of transmitted knowledge from our ancestors from that period.
Yeah, what happened was that until around about 10,000 BC, the Ice Age gripped the world. And in the Northern Hemisphere, this meant that the ice went all the way down in Britain to the Thames Valley in southern England, and in America all the way down to the Great Lakes. And it was much colder. So Britain, as we now know, is pretty much under ice, and so are a lot of other places. When the ice started to melt, and no one really knows what caused the ice age and what caused it to stop, possibility being a slight deviation in the Earth's orbit around the sun, but no one really knows. And but what happened is that over a very short period of time, just a few centuries, the ice began to melt, began to retreat, and this caused the seas throughout the world to get very much higher. In fact, during the height of the Ice Age, the sea level throughout the world was 400 feet lower than it is today. And the reason for that is that literally millions upon millions of tons of ice, tons of water was tied up in ice. The North Pole wasn't just what it is now, but the North Pole of the ice came all the way down to southern Britain. That's a hell of a lot more ice than that there is now. And so consequently, and there was far more glaciers in high land throughout the world. So when that melted, the seas began to rise. They rose by a couple of 100 feet, and then they stopped after about 1,000 years. And the warmer climates meant that in parts of Europe and elsewhere in the world, the Middle East and America, and parts of Asia, the humans started to found early cities, or they weren't exactly cities as we'd now understand them, but quite sizable settlements, where then they started to use stone for building. And before that time, most humans had been nomadic, so they started to settle. They began to learn how to farm and to domesticate animals. So the first settlements that became the, if you like, sort of pseudo cities began to be established not long after the Ice Age. But after a couple of 1,000 years of these early settlements being established, mainly along coastal regions, the seas began to rise again. It began to get warmer once more. And many of these were flooded throughout the world. And this, it seems, was where the stories of things like Atlantis, Lemuria, Mu, and the stories of the Great Flood in the Bible all came about.
Yes, well, we'll get to some of the sort of archaeological and geological dimensions of this shortly. Before we do, why do you think that just the very idea of Atlantis, or you mentioned Lemuria and Mu, etc., holds such powerful sway in the human imagination? Because for many people, it's they have kind of a sense that there's something to it. They don't know what, and equally, there's many other people who are very, very dismissive of the very idea of any kind of relatively advanced civilization in high antiquity. But it's a powerful force, even extending into our subconscious, I would venture.
Yeah, it is. I mean, put it this way, from what's archaeologically known about these kind of early settlements or early proto cities, if you like, they would have been the normal villages at that time where they were starting to do agriculture would have probably had about no more than 100 people in them, the extended families, really. But some of these coastal areas started having much larger settlements with over 1,000 people. They started building quite sophisticated dwellings, like, I mean, they weren't like the sort of thing you'd imagine in ancient Egypt or Greece, but they were people were building stone walls, and they dug down and had foundations to buildings where they could store things, and so they were relatively sophisticated. In Göbekli Tepe, for example, in Turkey, I mean, 10,000 years ago, they built something that was much more sophisticated than Stonehenge, which wasn't built for another 7,000 years. So these were some of these early settlements. So what they weren't, should I say, they didn't have what people now tend to think about Atlantis would have had, like huge Greek style buildings or pyramids or all this sort of stuff. But they did, they were much more sophisticated than anything that had happened before. And when these places were flooded, in many cases, tidal waves and such, which I shall come on to in a while. But when these places were flooded, a lot of people died. A lot of people had to escape inland. Some of these early cities did survive, like Jericho in what is now the West Bank. There was cities in places like Peru and also in Central Europe, which survived on higher land. But the flooding of these coastal settlements meant that the people that went inland and survived, these stories were handed down throughout the years when they became more and more exaggerated. So by the time that Plato wrote about Atlantis, which was around, if I remember rightly, around about 500 BC, thousands of years after these places were flooded, the stories had got out of all proportion. And they were basically talking about, I mean, Plato talks about Atlantis being something like the Greeks were capable of building in his time. And this tends to have happened elsewhere in the world. The stories became exaggerated. And I think now, even now, people tend to think about Atlantis and other ancient civilizations that may have succumbed to cataclysms as being highly advanced and perhaps visited by aliens. I mean, you probably realize I've been on Ancient Aliens quite a few times talking about the history of some of these ancient places. I mean, I don't necessarily say there were or were not aliens that came to Earth, but it's clear that there is actually no real evidence that these ancient cities were anything like an alien would build, or if an advanced civilization that could come to Earth. And they're nothing like what the ancient Egyptians and the Greeks were able to build. But the stories, I don't know, they became myths and legends that were exaggerated over time.
Yeah, if you do a search online, an image search for the term Atlantis, the architecture that you see is all classical Greek and Roman style columns, as you say, and those sorts of things. So that's directly traced back to Plato, as you mentioned. So a couple of things, like Rudolf Steiner, the mystic, well-known mystic, and other things as well he did in his time. But he writes about previous civilizations, that Atlantean, that there was something prior to that. He puts Lemuria and Mu in a timeline before that. Do you have a kind of like an open mind about that? What I'm driving at is we have this kind of myth of progress that human history has been from the caves to the stars without any ups and downs. Well, no major ups and downs, but Steiner and others have, however they've sourced their instincts, intuitions, information, there was more advanced, whatever, advanced in air quotes, however you want to look at that, that in the past there has been an advanced civilization, and that more than one possible disaster, maybe a flood or a series of floods, or it could have been something else, laid that civilization low, and then it took time for the human species to build back up again, ultimately to end up at Egypt, Greece, Rome, etc.
Well, put it this way, to look on a positive side that may sort of point towards there being an advanced civilization, is that let's just start with Atlantis. Plato tells us that Atlantis lay beyond the Pillars of Hercules. That's what the Greeks knew as the Straits of Gibraltar, just outside the Mediterranean, somewhere in the Atlantic. Not way out in the middle of it, but just outside the Pillars of Hercules. Now, there was an island, a sizable island, perhaps about the size of the Isle of Wight, which stood just outside the Pillars of Hercules, outside in the Atlantic, outside the Straits of Gibraltar, which was flooded massively, or literally it was pounded by a massive tsunami around 10,000 years ago. And this happened because as the waters are rising, obviously, it's getting warmer, great lump, well, great sheets of ice that held together land, massive land areas in northern, in sorry, western Canada, sorry, eastern Canada, Nova Scotia and round there, collapsed into the sea. Massive, I mean, many, 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 over thousands of square miles of land collapsed into the sea as the ice was melting. It had been basically holding it all together. This is known from geology that has been carried about out in that area. There's no doubt about this. And it seems almost certain that this would have forced a massive tsunami or a series of tsunami to cross the Atlantic and hit roughly what is now southern Spain and northern Africa. And this is what caused what is now a sunken island about a good few, good quite deep beneath the sea, to actually be pulverized. Now, they know from sound echo soundings and radar and sonar that under the sea at where this this island was, there seems to have been some kind of civilization there. They know they found building materials and so forth, but it was so pulverized and so long ago that nobody knows exactly what sort of buildings would have been built there. That may have been the beginning of the legend of Atlantis, and it'll take people to actually dive down and do and do proper surveys of that area to know what this place was like and how many people lived there. But it was definitely inhabited, and it definitely had some kind of civilization on it. The reason it hasn't been properly excavated or you know, by divers and so forth, is because it's in a very dangerous area. There is the water that comes out of the Mediterranean and flows into the Atlantic is just too strong for people to be diving down there safely. So that's the Atlantis possibility. Now, at the same time as there were legends going about Atlantis, earlier, in fact, there were legends about a land that lay off the coast of what is now Western Mexico in the Pacific. And it was researchers there who found found mention in Aztec and Mayan writings referring to a sunken land there. Something similar seems to have happened there, certainly because of rising sea levels. And archaeologists have discovered that along the coast of southern eastern Mexico was massively eroded away. They found evidence of early Olmec civilization there, the building that seemed to have been pyramids that were sunk beneath the sea and therefore broken apart, that may have been there at least 3,000 or 4,000 years ago, perhaps earlier. That is where the legend of Mu came from, because this is what people believe was being referred to, this early civilization that was there in Mexico. They believe may have been called Mu. There may be, in fact, some mistake there. The name could have been Mu, may have simply have meant land. Or some people say that they've got even had even the pronunciation was mistranslated, but there is definitely evidence that there was an early civilization there. And when we come to Lemuria, which is the other one, which is the kind of Atlantis, if you like, of the Indian Ocean, there were Tamil legends in southern India and what is now that the whole area of southern India about a civilization that once was an island off the southeast coast of India. And again, similar things. Archaeologists have found evidence that there was a civilization there of some kind, but again, no one really knows what it was. And again, it sank at the time that the sea levels are rising, earlier perhaps than 8,000 BC. So they're all happening at the same time. They may have all, some people believe, have come from an earlier civilization that may have existed somewhere down near where Antarctica is, in a time that was warmer. But I don't know. I don't think anyone's actually found any evidence of that yet. But there are many similarities between these civilizations that developed from these, in Sri Lanka, for example, and in Mexico, and in the Mediterranean area. They all started building pyramids, for a start. All three of these civilizations had a god that was supposed to be associated with the sun. These are civilizations that developed from short after these civilizations sank. And they all, in Sri Lanka, in the Middle East, in the Mediterranean, and in Mexico, all had a sun god called Ra or Re, which seems interesting. They do perhaps come from a civilization that once was older than and united them all.
Yes, well, there's, you know, much has been written and spoken about that particular area, and there are these commonalities, not least the pyramids, but all sorts of other things down to quite fine details that appear to, you know, in civilizations that are separated by thousands of miles of what was now ocean. So a couple of things there in the book. You've got a little section where you talk about that the mega tsunami that you mentioned from Eastern Canada. And it's quite striking to see it set out, actually, how quickly something like that could move across the Earth and just how devastating it would be. The island that you mentioned in the Mediterranean being, as you said, pulverized, then leads us to think about, well, people keep saying, where's the evidence for such and such civilization? Well, we've now got, currently, I think at the moment, about 71% of the Earth covered by water. Who knows what's down there? You know, there's so many. We keep finding, apparently, like new species of deep ocean creatures, you know, and that it's the most unexplored area of the world, really, is, you know, is the deep sea. And when you're talking about evidence, where is some of it? Well, that island that was pulverized, we maybe never discover what's down there, but there's ruins. And this, again, comes to, you know, you detail in the book, but there's ruins all over the world that are now underwater, you know, ruins of buildings, man-made structures. You talked about Lemuria. There's, you know, famous ones hundreds of feet underwater off the south of India. And then we get to the ones that you detail in the book, this Doggerland idea, which is something that we'll come to in more detail in a moment. But if we simply look at, this is what interested me when I first started reading about this, the sea levels rising, and then we look at mountaintops and where islands are, where the bodies of water are now. I think probably Easter Island is a great example, and there's various archipelagos of islands in various parts of the world that when you look at the profile of those land masses that are currently underwater, what you're seeing then, these islands are actually mountaintops, or that, you know, if you drain the earth of water, then a lot of these archipelagos, suddenly you think, well, that's a range of mountains. So then you factor in what you're saying about the lower sea levels, then you begin to make sense of why you have things like the, you know, the statues on Easter Island, and, you know, why would such a tiny little civilization be constructing anything like this? So all of that taken together suggests that, with that geological evidence as well, and what happened with sea levels and mega tsunamis and everything else, what we're talking about with Atlantis is entirely plausible. It's a name being given to a common story handed down from millennia to millennia through humans all over the world about one or more natural disasters. It's really quite simple if you put it that way.
It's interesting that the Atlantis, which is what the IS on the end of Greek words simply means, like a place like Memphis and so on and so forth. It's like a name of a city, basically means city or town or a country. It's like the Greeks started to use the Romans, IA on the end of everything, Britannia and so forth. So the IS bit, so it's Atlantis, Atlant, and then is on the end. So Atlant would be its basic name. Atlant is the name that the Aztecs give to their sunken city. Earlier, the Mayans referred to it as Mu, but this same city is given the same name as pretty much Atlan and Atlantis, pretty much the same name in both the Mexican world and also the Central American world and the Mediterranean world. That's another weird one. But we're talking about the fact that people would say, well, if these sunken places did exist and they were quite advanced, then how come, archaeologists haven't dug down and had the divers go down there and found them? Well, remember I said that in the Ice Age, the sea levels were 400 feet lower than they are now. Now, first of all, when you think about people that if they suspect there might be something down there by doing sonar and so forth, all they can tell is that there's been movement in the earth on the seabed, and there's bumps there that could be rocks or mounds that could be over, that have built silt and sediment built up over a bit over of dwellings and so forth, and temples or anything else that might be there. If these are 400 feet down, in fact, probably deeper in some cases, because the movements of the earth since and volcanic movements and so on and so forth have perhaps dropped it lower. And sometimes, and what you also have to remember is not only did the sea rise, but in some places the land rose with it, because there used to be massive amounts of ice on top of the land, like 2 miles of it in some places. When the ice melted, that land over many hundreds of years started to rise, and like a seesaw effect, it pushed down other areas of land. For example, in Britain, there was 2 miles of ice on top of Scotland. And when that melted, over many, many years, Scotland started to rise and southern Britain started to sink. So, and then so also did areas in what is now the sea. So, for example, this place that's just outside the Straits of Gibraltar, I think that's well over 500 feet deep. You cannot have divers go down with scuba diving equipment, basically. I mean, even if they have rebreathers, I mean, they can't stay down more than 200. I mean, I used to do scuba diving. I mean, I went down to about 100 feet, and you can go down to 200, but you can't stay down there very long because you'll get the bends. And going down to 400 feet, the only people who can go that deep are people with special diving equipment who are breathing helium, specially trained people who work on oil rigs and so forth. Going down much further than that, and you're going to die. So to get these kind of divers to archaeologists don't have much money. They don't have much funding. They go down in diving suits and they can't get down to these depths. They can't afford to hire the kind of things that the military might use or that might be used by oil companies, which are basically spacesuits to go down deeper and start to breathe helium and have people come up and live in pressurization tanks for the next week or two. They can't afford that. So the bottom line is, it's not when I say, oh, go down and dig down there, send down divers to do underwater archaeology. No, it can't be done. Well, what about these submarines like the one that discovered the Titanic? How many of those are there in the world? They mainly belong to like the American and British, well, British Navy, I don't think it's got one, American Navy and so forth. In other words, it's not possible to go digging these places. That's why no one's found them.
So, if we turn to the part of the world, Doggerland, that's taken from the title of the book, in terms of megalithic building in Britain and, on the, how shall I put it, the areas of land that would have been above water in millennia gone by, before the sea levels rose, it seems that the pattern is that the oldest megaliths currently, extant in the British Isles at the minute are in the north, the far north, and there's a pattern of them moving south as the building continued, as time went by further and further south. So the idea being that the megalithic sites in the north of Scotland are considerably older than, for example, Stonehenge or anything in the south of Britain. But not only that, that building in the north was that pattern was begun in pre, as I indicated, pre-existing lands that were later deluged. So, and that takes us, well, you can expand on this in whatever way you'd like to. That takes us to this area that you're looking at in detail in the book.
I mean, Lemuria, Mu, and Atlantis are the ones that are, you know, most famous.
That concludes part one of our interview. Part two will be available soon in the subscribers area at legalizefreedom.com.
Legalizefreedom.com.